WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Another major ransomware attack against U.S. companies.
Cybersecurity experts say the attack appears to be coming from Eastern Europe or Russia and is paralyzing the networks of at least 200 U.S. companies. Information technology company Kaseya says it's investigating what it calls a potential attack on a tool used by IT professionals. The group believed to be behind the attacks, R-Evil, is the same one that attacked a U.S. meat supplier this spring. Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
Hurricane Elsa could reach Florida by late Monday. John Cangelosi with the National Hurricane Center.
There's just some big question marks about how strong this will be near Florida and its exact track. But the advice that we're giving people that live in Florida, really anywhere in the state of Florida, is to just watch the system closely, have some time, and be ready if watches go up to prepare.
This morning, Elsa's heading toward Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And as Elsa moves toward the Sunshine State, the search continues through the rubble of the partially collapsed condo building in Surfside. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava talks about the timeline for taking down what's left of that building.
We cannot move swiftly to demolish this building. The building needs to be carefully evaluated. We have many engineers working together to look at all of the circumstances, make the determination on the timeline. It cannot be before this storm.
22 people confirmed dead, more than 120 still missing. The new highly contagious Delta variant of COVID-19 has been confirmed in St. Mary's County, Maryland. The health department there did not give any other details. That case comes as Maryland lifted its state of emergency yesterday. And COVID emergency orders have been lifted in Virginia as well, but that doesn't mean the demand for emergency food assistance has eased.
We saw a 50% increase in the number of families with referrals to us. Very simply, 5,400, a little bit more, came to us.
Charles Meng, the CEO of the Arlington Food Assistance Center, says the need remains.
Those are essentially the three groups that we serve, the elderly, the disabled, and the working poor.
Meng says that includes restaurant workers and other low-wage earners still trying to get on their feet after COVID. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
This summer, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office is reassigning school resource officers to respond to calls involving mental health or substance abuse crisis. Sheriff Michael Chapman says members of the Community Assistance Response and Empowerment Team will respond alongside deputies and then do follow-ups after each call.
Our deputies will go back and be able to check in, make sure things are going okay, work with our mental health professionals, to ensure that the people that are involved in these calls are getting all the resources and assistance that they need.
They'll evaluate the pilot program's effectiveness at the end of the summer. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Dodgers 10-5. The Lightning beat the Canadians 6-3 to take a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Final. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
I have a Maryland traffic update for you. On the Beltway first, inner loop and outer loop from Prince George's County to Montgomery County. No delays. You're not going to tap the brakes. Everything is clear. Between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95. On the northbound side, that's at speed. Same thing on the southbound side. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. No delays east and west. And at the Bay Bridge, two lanes are headed east and two lanes are headed west with no delays on either shoreline. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday, then becoming partly cloudy. Should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures into the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligget in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
It is a Saturday morning update and a happy Independence Day weekend to you. We are joined by John Gizzi. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning and a happy Independence Day.
Happy 4th coming up tomorrow.
John, we're well over a year from the next election. One president has been out campaigning this past week. Another president is planning to hit the campaign trail. That's an early start.
It certainly is. We're having elections, it seems, round the clock. And the 2022 midterm elections, as you say, are more than a year away. But it's not only the president's campaigning, but it's the maneuvering of the candidates, some of whom are incumbents who are in trouble.
Well, you mentioned candidates in trouble, and two key swing states will have some very interesting elections come up. Let's start with Michigan, because we've seen a lot of Gretchen Whitmer in the past year, and we've also seen a lot of the Detroit police chief in media appearances. Tell us what's coming.
Well, I was in Ann Arbor last week, which is a Democratic bastion. What struck me is that when I talked to some of the locals, there's a lot of disappointment and even anger at Democratic Governor Whitmer. The reason is almost universal. She oversaw a lockdown that dealt crippling blows to the service industry and shut down many restaurants in the water wonderland. Michigan is recovered from COVID, but its economy still hasn't recovered. And according to a poll from the Michigan Regional Chamber of Commerce, the governor's popularity has plummeted to 50%, and her negative rating has risen to 44%. At the same time, Republicans appear to have a most unique and stellar candidate who could very well become the first Republican governor since Reconstruction who happens to be black. That's James Craig, who just retired after 8 years as the highly regarded police chief of Detroit. He's now focused on running for governor. Sources told me he will become a candidate. Now, there are six other Republicans who smell blood and have exploratory committees to run for the state's top office. But Craig is the name one hears so often. One postscript to this. Joe Biden is coming to celebrate the 4th of July in beautiful Traverse City, Michigan. But more than a few people say this is just the start of several appearances by the president to try to bail out Gretchen Whitmer. As several put it, he owes her the narrow capture of Michigan's electoral votes by Joe Biden was in part due to the organization and personal efforts of Governor Whitmer.
So let's cross the state line, head down to Ohio. That's going to be an interesting one in the Senate.
It certainly is. And it's amazing how Donald Trump is, of course, the former president now, but he still draws attention with his visits. Last week, he held his first Make America Great rally in Wellington, Ohio. And it's the first such rally he's done since he entered the former presidency. He made a strong denunciation of Republican Congressman Anthony Gonzalez, who voted for his impeachment, and promoted the candidacy of his former aide, Max Miller. That's going to be a primary that will have national attention. But Trump also made news for what he didn't say, with Senator Rob Portman retiring, Buckeye State Republicans have several major candidates to choose from to succeed him, all of whom call themselves Trump Republicans. These include Jane Timken, the former state Republican chairman, who benefited when she ran for the party helm by personal calls from Donald Trump, Josh Mandel, former state treasurer and U.S. Senate candidate, and J.D. Vance, author of the acclaimed book Hillbilly Elegy, who announced his candidacy last week. For now, the Donald isn't saying who his choice is, but all sources I've talked to in Ohio say whoever he endorses is better than even money to win the primary.
Well, the former president was down at the southern border this week with yet another strong Republican governor.
Mm-hmm. He appeared with Governor Greg Abbott, and I might add Newsmax was on the job, and my colleague Emerald Robinson interviewed former President Trump. Donald Trump very clearly is showing that immigration, if he has anything to do with it, will be an issue in the coming campaign. And he is highlighting some of the problems and the humanitarian concerns that have come from Joe Biden presiding over the immigration issue at the border. His is essentially a back-to-back visit. Vice President Kamala Harris was there a week before, appearing in El Paso, Texas, and President Trump chose to be in McAllen, Texas, another border city, which I might add, just elected a Republican mayor, and it's a city that is 77% Latino. A very interesting contrast in locales between Harris and Trump.
So the House of Representatives will launch its own investigation into the January 6th riot at the Capitol. The Republican representation on the committee is an interesting pair.
Oh, to say the least, Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. And they are two of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump after he was out of the presidency. I might add that both of them have strongly denounced the president's behavior on January 6th and made statements that would appear to link him to the events that occurred outside the U.S. Capitol. Now, it should also be pointed out, this may boomerang on them. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy wanted Republicans to simply boycott this commission. He wants to move on. Liz Cheney joined the commission with the blessings of Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She faces a very tough primary challenge next year, and the polls show she's not in good shape. Congressman Kinzinger's future is nebulous. Illinois is having redistricting, and that is in the hands of the Democratic-controlled legislature. And there's all kinds of things that could happen to his suburban Chicago district. For now, it appears that two Republican House members, who are by no means safe, will have their security a little bit weakened by taking on this assignment, at least in the Republican primary.
They did have a choice in the matter, right?
They certainly did. They chose to serve on the commission, and their constituents and fellow Republicans will decide their fate.
Donald Rumsfeld passed away this week. He may be best remembered for his role in Bush 43's administration as the Secretary of Defense, but he had quite a career, including another stint in that position.
He certainly did, and he has a unique status in history as the youngest Secretary of Defense at age 43 and as the second oldest civilian head of the military at age 68. He just came in under World War II Secretary of War Henry Stimson, who was 70. Rumsfeld will be judged on his second stint at the Pentagon. Many people who work there still talk about the secretary rushing out and pulling injured employees to safety after the plane crashed in the home of the armed forces on 9/11. He was known for his press conferences where he had memorable quotes and comments. As my late colleague, radio reporter Ivan Scott, a classmate of Rumsfeld's from Princeton, once put it, "Rummy's a rock star." History will largely judge him on the outcome of Afghanistan and Iraq, and how they fare in the future. But as you mentioned, Rick, there was a lot more to Rumsfeld. As I said, he was a Princeton graduate on the wrestling team there, and later a naval aviator. His love was politics, however, and in a major upset in 1962, he got elected to Congress at the age of 30. People thought he would be in the House leadership or U.S. Senate before long. But he realized that he was not going places as a minority member of Congress. And in 1969, he resigned to join the administration of President Richard Nixon. President Nixon wanted him to dismantle the anti-poverty agency known as the Office of Economic Opportunity. He tried for 2 years, but that would come later. Then Rumsfeld moved up as Nixon's counselor and ambassador to NATO. His career really hit a high point, though, when old House comrade Gerald Ford became president and named friend Rummy his chief of staff. With help from a strong deputy by the name of Dick Cheney, he was able to get the Ford White House in order after the Nixon resignation. In less than a year, Ford fired his Secretary of Defense and turned to Rumsfeld to head the Pentagon. He spent many years in the private sector, but only returned to public life when George W. Bush tapped him for his second stint at the Pentagon. I might add that was impressive in itself. One of his major opponents, who warned the president-elect not to choose Rumsfeld, was none other than George H.W. Bush, his father. He disliked Rumsfeld, felt that he was self-important and Machiavellian. George W. Bush was dazzled by his knowledge of defense and turned to him. He was, whatever one thinks of him and however history will remember him, inarguably a leader of consequence in post-Cold War America, and he'll be missed.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist, Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you and have a great weekend, John.
I certainly will, and it will be nice to have some real 4th of July barbecues after a couple of years.
I like it. It is the Saturday morning update. We're 20 minutes after 7 o'clock, and we are headed over to the WMAL Traffic Center. LBD is there this morning.
On the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland, it's clear on the inner loop and outer loop. No construction and no accidents. On 66 in Fairfax County, on the westbound side of 66 at the Centerville exit, exit 53, that exit ramp is closed for construction. You might want to use the Braddock Road exit as a detour. Now on 95 in Virginia, traffic is jammed up on the southbound side in Garrisonville between the Garrisonville Acquire exit, exit 143, and Centerport Parkway. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday, then becoming partly cloudy. Should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures into the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital. Beautiful Saturday morning at 7:21 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update, and we welcome back Jim Trusty. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. The prosecutors in New York versus the Trump Organization. We saw the perp walk. We saw the attention that Cyrus Vance and Letitia James have garnered for their efforts to go after the Trump Organization, Donald Trump, and anybody in the crosshairs. Your analysis of what we saw this week.
Well, bad circus would be the short version. Look, Cyrus Vance and Letitia James have clearly viewed their roles as basically the people that are going to bring down Donald Trump. So they've publicly announced that they're going after Donald Trump. They're doing everything they can to find a crime to pin on him. And, you know, you have to start with that and before moving on. It's not the way professional ethical prosecutors are supposed to do their job. You don't just target someone because you don't like him or don't like his politics and then scour for years looking for evidence. My guess is, in this case, what they did was everything they could think of to flip Mr. Weisselberg, the CFO for the Trump Organization. This is a guy who'd been around Donald Trump for 40-something years working for him. And I think they pushed and pushed and pushed, and he said, no, thank you. I'm not going to deliver Donald Trump's head on a platter to you. And so now they're charging him with state tax offenses, which by definition is pretty thin gruel compared to what you normally see in white-collar prosecutions.
So the indictment handed down against the Trump chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. What did you make of what you saw in the indictment?
Well, I guess the first thing is a little bit outside the indictment, how it got to that point, and it just kind of makes you hold your nose. I mean, this apparently, from public reporting, started off with Weisselberg's son's ex-wife showing up at the district attorney's office with a box full of documents and saying, boy, my ex-father-in-law is a real piece of garbage. Go investigate him. And they lovingly run with it. They take that information. They start plowing through it to build a case. Again, I think in the hopes of squeezing him to help indict Donald Trump. But when you look at the indictment, you know, the fruits of that labor, it's really pretty measly. They claim that basically for a 15-year period or so, that he was earning between salary and bonuses about $940,000 a year. And from their calculations, he should have claimed $1,040,000 a year. So $100,000 of tax loss for each of those years. Now, the part of the indictment refers to over $500,000 in lost federal taxes, and that's the definition of gratuitous because there is no federal charge, there is no federal jurisdiction. That's just putting sound bites into an indictment at this guy's expense because it's not part of their case. And then lastly, in terms of just some quick hits from the indictment, they say that he lied about his New York City residency to avoid taxes, which I suspect is a basic sanity test if you actually live around New York. But in any event, whatever he did about his residency, that stopped in 2013. So you've got years and years of looking hard at his taxes and coming up with these, again, fairly minor types of allegations. I mean, I look at this case, Rick, overall, and I say this is a pretty good basis for an IRS audit, but it's not a great criminal case.
Now, my understanding is they spent $10 million on this investigation to nail a guy that beat them out of $1 million.
Yes. Not the best cost-benefit analysis. You always have to be a little careful about, like, these prosecution investigation numbers, how they're calculated. But the bottom line is, you know, when it's a targeted investigation to go after a person, not after criminal conduct, it's ripe for difficulties.
So a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute, this is the tip of the iceberg. They're going to get Alan Weisselberg, and they're going to squeeze him, and he's going to turn on Trump. Where do you see that possibly going?
I think it's unlikely. It's not impossible. Look, this is white-collar stuff that's been kind of public for a while, and there's been a lot of commentary coming out of the DA's office. This was not a surprise moment. I think there was probably a lot of conversation between Weisselberg's attorneys and the DA's office and the attorney general. And so they could not resolve it short of indictment, short of this little perp walk exercise. And that tells me so far, at least, he's completely rejected the idea of cooperation. Now, will that change as he starts to look at his numbers, as they make plea offers, as they really assess the strength of the case? It could. But a 40-year loyalist who said no so far strikes me as somebody who's going to continue to say no to the government's overtures.
So there would be an inclination, as you look at this, to say, is that the best you got? Is that all there is to it? So the question would be, as a former prosecutor, you were both a former state and federal prosecutor, is it possible they have more up their sleeve? They will issue further indictments? Any sense of the indicators?
It's possible that there will be more to come, that there'd be some sort of superseding indictment that might go after, you know, somebody in the Trump family, for instance. I think it's a little unlikely. Again, these are not quick-moving investigations. This is not something that's stopping crime in progress. We already talked about how some of the conduct goes back 8 years. So I think what we're seeing is the frustration of not flipping the CFO. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, Rick, that you know, that's a logical pressure point for a white-collar case, the accountant, the CFO, the CPA, the guy that, you know, actually did the books for you. And right now it looks like that could be the end of the line because he didn't flip. But, you know, there's a lot of creativity going along with this this crusade against Donald Trump, so maybe they'll come up with some other vehicle to go after other family members. We'll have to wait and see.
Jim, many pundits have said that the pursuit by Letitia James and Cyrus Vance, the New York prosecutors, has been political in nature. Would you have a comment on that?
I think there's a lot of evidence of that. I mean, Letitia James announced way back when, after the Mueller probe, that she was convinced that Donald Trump was guilty of obstruction of justice. And that's not the type of comment that a fair and impartial prosecutor should be making about anyone who hasn't been charged or hasn't been convicted. Cy Vance had moments like the Paul Manafort ill-fated prosecution, which it got dismissed, where it showed that he was really moving in political circles more than judicial ones or ones of fairness. So I think there's an awful lot of smoke and some pretty tangible fire that these guys are not doing the job right, that they bring a bad name to all the good prosecutors out there by being so politically motivated.
Jim, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Kristi Noem, her efforts to conduct a 4th of July celebration at Mount Rushmore that was shot down by the Department of the Interior. You've actually written about it on your blog, and it is Independence Day weekend. Where can people find it?
Well, it's on the IFRA Law website. That's IFRAH Law website under Crime in the Suites, where we put our blogs, and talking to you inspired me to write it. So hopefully it's something that's worth reading.
That's Crime in the Suites at ifralaw.com. Jim, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
And you too, Jim. It's 729. It's a Saturday morning update on WMAL. And we're going to change it up a little bit. Katie McFarland is traveling this weekend. She is in Europe, and we are going to get a very unique perspective on things from Europe from Katie McFarland. That's coming up next. So stay with us here on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. We'll find out today whether unemployed Marylanders will keep getting supplemental unemployment benefits, including $300 in federal money each week. Those benefits expire tonight. A judge is expected to make a ruling this morning in two lawsuits brought by unemployed Marylanders who are fighting the governor's decision to end the benefits tonight instead of the federal government's September 6th date. The plaintiffs argue they need the money to stay on their feet while they look for jobs. Hogan says it isn't necessary now that there are plenty of jobs. Floridians are bracing for Hurricane Elsa, which could hamper search and rescue efforts at the site of the partial building collapse in Surfside. Director for the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Kevin Guthrie.
Our state meteorologist reported that the impacts of South Florida from Elsa remain possible and could occur as early as overnight Sunday through Monday.
126 people are still missing. The U.S. military leaves Afghanistan's Bagram Airfield.
Pentagon spokesman John Kirby describes the U.S. departure from Kabul Airfield this week, the epicenter of the Afghan war for 20 years, as part of a safe, orderly drawdown of U.S. forces scheduled to be out of Afghanistan by the end of next month.
Enables us to maintain an ongoing diplomatic presence, support the Afghan people and the government, and prevent Afghanistan from once again becoming a safe haven for terrorism that threatens our homeland.
Fox's Jared Halpern, WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Dodgers. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Beltway, in Virginia and in Maryland, inner loop and outer loop, no delays from construction or accidents. In Prince George's County, heads up, south Suitland Parkway, westbound, there is an accident near Naylor Road. On 66 in Virginia, Fairfax County, westbound, at Route 28, the Centerville exit, exit 53, that's closed for construction. Use Braddock Road as a detour. And there is slow traffic on 95 southbound in Dumfries. You'll find it slow between Dumfries Road, exit 152, and Centerport Parkway, exit 136. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies on this Saturday. We are expecting a nice start to the weekend. Lower humidity, comfortable temperatures in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees. A few isolated showers, mainly north and east of D.C. through the afternoon and evening. Later on tonight, partly cloudy. Lows in the 50s in the suburbs, lower 60s around town. For the 4th of July, looking good. We do have a chance for showers early on, but I think we'll see partly cloudy skies through the afternoon, highs in the mid-80s, dropping back into 70s by the time the fireworks go off. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis, on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
4th of July weekend, Independence Day in America. Katie McFarland joins us. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And KT joins us from Italy this morning. Happy 4th.
Well, happy 4th. And I've got the best news in the world. I am in Lucca, Italy. It's in Tuscany. I'm here for a long weekend for a wedding. And I was on one of the first flights from the United States into Italy post-COVID. And I've got to tell you, they love Americans in Italy. I mean, they love Americans all over Europe. So we're at a wedding, Rick, where we've been now at sort of 3 or 4 events, and there are people in their 30s are getting married, and they're from all over, literally all over the world, from India, from Europe, from the UK, from Scotland. And everyone's reaction is to thank America. You know, they don't care about the Biden stuff or the Trump stuff or all the stuff we're just so consumed with on a daily basis. I mean, everyone says, oh, I got the American vaccine, or I got the test. I've had the COVID test. And the attitude seems to be, America, you know, we're all, you know, you're it. We can count on you. You're the ones that in a crisis, it's America. It's not China, not Russia. And they don't sweat the small stuff. But I cannot tell you how great I feel about being in Europe, which, you know, these people are normally just sort of put their noses up at Americans, especially in tourist time. First of all, they're glad to see Americans back. And the attitude is, okay, you know, we've gone through an international global pandemic, but you guys, you've solved it. It's great.
Well, KT, you know, the constant drumbeat from most of the media outlets during the Trump administration is how we were alienating our allies. We were alienating people all around the world. And it is very encouraging and very refreshing to hear your real perspective as to how people really feel about the United States.
You know, that's what I was so struck with, because if you, you know, read, you know, look at the stuff of the Council on Foreign Relations and the pundits and all, oh, America's stock has never been lower, Donald Trump is terrible, America's not the world leader, okay, fine. But I am in little towns in Italy, in vineyards in Italy, and it's the average person, the small business person, and they, to an individual, are looking to America. I mean, America's leadership role is in the world. They look at it like, okay, the COVID, the pandemic, you know, China caused it, America. We knew America could cure it. America cured it. And so it's a very, very, very different attitude.
And as you travel, what do you see in terms of the effects of COVID-19 on people's daily routines? Is everybody masked up there, or are they coming out of it as we are here, and those people who are vaccinated not wearing masks? What are you seeing?
Well, the attitude towards everybody is that if you're an American, the assumption is you've been vaccinated. So nobody's, there are no, you know, mask Nazis telling you to mask up. You're just sort of going in, you're going out. Oh, you're an American? Okay, come on. Happy to see you. The Europeans are still wearing masks. They're wearing masks in public places. They're not wearing masks as much on the street corner. But the feeling is, especially in Europe, which is so dependent upon tourism, and Europe was so locked down for the last year and a half, and they really haven't seen anybody. I mean, I've talked to people from Norway who said, you know, we were met at the airport. We're Norwegians, and we were met at the airport with guys in hazmat suits. And in Italy, saying, well, you've got to get the vaccine before you travel. You've got to get the test before you get on the plane. You got to get the test after. But the assumption is, okay, it is over, and the euphoria and the sense of international goodwill is just palpable. You can feel it everywhere. I mean, I traveled a lot abroad in my life, and I've never felt prouder to be an American than I do right now.
Well, again, I cannot tell you how just encouraging it is to hear that after the 4 years of that media narrative of negativity about President Trump on the world stage. So I am glad you are setting the record straight for us. I think that's great. Do people seem to care or talk at all about American politics? Do they talk about Biden? Do they talk about Trump? Or is it pretty much
No, I mean, they're not following those little details. They know Trump. They know it's exciting. They're still talking about Trump. You know, love him, hate him. He certainly captured a lot of people's attention. Biden, a bit boring. But the bottom line is the American people. I mean, the hope that people have about the vaccine. And don't underestimate, nobody could figure out the vaccine. Nobody could figure out the testing. And even, you know, the Chinese, nobody here wants the Chinese vaccine. Nobody here wants the Russian vaccine. They may want the British vaccine, but they really want the American vaccines, plural.
Well, that's great, KT, and I really, really appreciate you joining us from Tuscany this morning. And it's just to hear you say how proud you are to be an American. It's one thing if you're in the United States on the 4th of July. I think we all feel that here. We see the American flags out. We see the bunting. We have the parades. We have the fireworks. But to hear you say that from Europe, as the reaction to what you are hearing from Europeans, I just can't tell you how exciting that is this morning.
And they're all in the middle of their, what we call soccer, what they call football, you know, competitions. America's nowhere near being victorious in anything, but America's victorious just because we're Americans. You know, we cure things. We fix things. We figure out how to get things done. We get people vaccinated. We get hundreds of millions of people vaccinated. And so it's just, I'm really proud.
KT McFarland, live from Tuscany in Italy this morning, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. You have a wonderful weekend, KT. Thank you.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
The honor is ours. It is 7:44. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us next, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
In Prince George's County on the Beltway, there is a crash on the outer loop in Greenbelt at Kenilworth Avenue. Also in Prince George's County, Suitland Parkway westbound, there is an accident near Naylor Road. Now into Virginia, on the Beltway, it's all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 95 southbound in Woodbridge, that is jammed up between Route 1 and 123. Also, on the southbound side of 95 in Dumfries, you'll find that very slow between Dumfries Road, exit 152, and the Centerport Parkway, exit 136. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday. Then becoming partly cloudy should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures in the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
64 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 7:45 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Where Washington comes to talk. Weekday afternoons, 3 to 6. The Vince Colonnais Show on 105.9 FM WMAL.
7:50, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL Independence Day weekend. And if you were tuned in a little bit earlier, you heard that we changed things up a little bit. KT McFarland traveling, and she joined us live from Italy about 15 minutes or so ago. So now we are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and he is the author of Operation Dark Heart and the president of London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always good to join you.
Good to have you with us on a holiday weekend. Big news, of course, out of Afghanistan and the U.S. pullout, and we have now abandoned the Bagram Air Base. And tell us your thoughts on that.
So, look, there's a distinction with a difference of what we're doing. The idea of nation building was never going to work. A lot of people have commented on that, and that was something that I think a lot of us agreed we should step away from. And that meant the withdrawal of conventional forces and essentially ceasing our effort to be the Praetorian Guard for the Afghan government. It's another thing altogether to walk away and not maintain and take advantage of the investment of blood and sweat and tears and treasure and bringing some level of stability to the country. And this is where I think the Biden administration has made some huge mistakes. President Trump and Mike Pompeo in particular was able to establish a path forward, Rick, which I thought was the best way to go. I actually wrote about it in my book, Operation Dark Heart, where they essentially emulated the way we won the war originally, to work with the Afghan militia, with what we call the warlords. These guys aren't upstanding citizens who are going to show up at the YMCA making donations to the local PD, but they are the ones who run Afghanistan. Afghanistan is fundamentally not ungoverned, it's self-governed. It's very much dispersed, controlled politically, and that's where they had made their agreements. When Biden came in, Rick, just so everybody understands, Biden decided, no, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to change the timelines, and I'm going to make sure that we're out by September. The original date was supposed to be May, almost 2 months ago. So what we've now seen is a dismissal of the agreement that President Trump and Mike Pompeo did, which then sent the Taliban into a position of authority. And now they've been able to take over a lot more districts and convince a lot of these warlords that were going to basically kind of be aligned to let things be stable to go to the Taliban. So I think what we've seen here is a series of decisions which are going to make things much worse. And stepping out, leaving Bagram, which was our primary base of operations, where we should be able to have launched special operations and intelligence collection missions from, has now been shut down. So I just don't see good things by September at the rate we're going in Afghanistan.
So I want to read you a story from the Associated Press this morning,
yeah.
And they are not known as a conservative news organization these days. The two-decade war in Afghanistan has given U.S. spies a perch for keeping tabs on terror groups that might once again use that nation to plan attacks against the U.S. homeland. But that will end soon. But that will end soon. The withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan is leaving intelligence agencies scrambling for other ways to monitor and stop terrorists. They'll have to depend more on technology and their allies in the Afghan government, even as it faces an increasingly uncertain future once U.S. and NATO forces depart. Coming from the AP, that's pretty strong words.
It is, and they're right. And look, this is where it was ironic that Joe Biden was asked about this and wouldn't discuss it because he wanted to only talk about happy things at the last press conference. And regarding that, Joe Biden has made pretty much been on every wrong decision regarding foreign policy for the past 34 to 40 years. I mean, he's always been wrong. This is another example of that, I believe.
And that's quoting that's quoting Tony Schaefer and Bob Gates.
That is. And I'm just saying, I'm just saying that, I think getting out of there, stopping nation building, right thing to do. Abandoning our ability to conduct special operations and intelligence collection based on our needs as the United States, bad move. And there is a distinction with a difference there. I just don't see this going well. Obviously, we'll be updating the audience as things develop over the next few months.
Okay, that's one story we wanted to get to this morning. I want to turn to China as they celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party, and a little saber rattling from the Chinese president yesterday. Moving forward, your thoughts on China, and it seems to be an ever-increasing threat.
So we know now that it's very likely that the coronavirus came from the lab. That's one of the biggest revelations I think we all need to take note of. That investigation has to go to the forefront. It has to be determined, was it accidental or was it purposeful? If it was purposeful, I think we have to do something to hold them accountable because of the very thing you just mentioned. Their 100th anniversary had really bellicose language. It's very clear where they're going. All the military professionals I speak to, it's very clear they're going to go toward domination of the Pacific Rim. All the folks I speak to regarding economics, you speak to a lot of the same folks I do, recognize China's goal is to essentially dominate the world economically. These are all things we must be aware of and deal with. And at this point, I don't see the United States moving in the direction it needs to be effective in countering the threat. Rick, we do a podcast, Thought to Action. We're actually starting a new series called Red Alert China. And we're going to be looking through and going through with Gordon Chang, David Goldman, a bunch of our other experts will be going through and doing a series to talk about and educate, everybody that wants to watch on what these issues really are.
And we've got about a minute and a half or so left.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the Biden airstrikes this week, targeting the Iranian-backed militia in Syria. And tell us your thoughts on that.
So the objective, mission objectives assigned to this are still fairly unclear. And to make a long story as short as possible, because there's not a lot there, the ostensible reason was they were targeting their drone facilities. Now, let me be clear on what this is. This isn't the sophisticated drones we use. These are drones which you can go to essentially most stores that sell drones, some of the bigger ones, you know, $1,000 drones. And what they've done, they started with ISIS, by the way. It didn't start with the Syrians or with those they were targeting. They weaponize them. They actually can attach hand grenades and other small munitions and arms and drop them. So this is what they were targeting, supposedly. What's notable, obviously, is there's been very little battle damage assessment. We've heard very little from anybody about what the end effects were. I guess we'll have to continue to watch and find out what happened, because at this point, the Biden administration has not made clear why they did it or what the long-term objectives are for that area.
And I want to take our final 2 minutes or so, Tony, and just say it is the 4th of July holiday weekend, and as we look at America, this is just the weekend that we celebrate our freedom, and we celebrate our history, and looking at it, we have to acknowledge and just say a huge thanks to all of the men and women currently in service, all of the men and women who have served this country in the military. You, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you for your service in the military and in your other national security service. And it's such a wonderful feeling we have this weekend, and we just have to thank everyone who has helped to provide that freedom for us, for a couple of centuries now.
Yeah, so I appreciate you bringing it up, and thank you, Rick, for, your noting this. The brave men and women of the United States have done an amazing job of securing not only the future of the United States, but the world. Let me be clear on this, because, again, I don't want to sound like it's up to the United States to be the policeman of the world. But what we've done is been able to establish a path where our actions speak very clearly about who we are. We're not perfect, but we've done more to bring stability to the world and opportunity to the world than any other nation ever. So it's not about America first simply means we are able to protect our own interests and do the right thing. It also means helping our neighbors, being effective in leading and protecting the interests of others. It's about preventing dominance of others. World War II, we clearly stopped fascism globally. We continue to stand as an example of where people want to come here. And I find it ironic, Rick, that for all the talk about critical race theory and all these other things, that supposedly we have a bad society, it's funny that everybody still wants to come here and be American. Isn't that something? So thank you, Rick, and thank the audience. I know that a lot of folks get up early to hear us every Saturday. God bless them all, and let's enjoy the benefits of our freedom and the fruits of the investment of every man and woman who served in our military for the past 240 years.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, LondonCenter.org, and you can check out his Thought to Action podcast there. Have a great Independence Day weekend, Tony. Thank you.
You too, Rick. Thanks.
And that's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you for joining us, and we wish you the very happiest Independence Day, 4th of July holiday weekend. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.